This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. It's a new month, which means that it's the time for our monthly special that explores the narratives of historical landmarks and places in the Klang Valley. We're in the month of September, which means that we will be celebrating Malaysia Day soon. Of course, it's a different kind of Malaysia these days, with the term Malaysia Baharu or New Malaysia being bandied around almost every other day. That's great that we are celebrating something that's new and different, but sometimes in order to appreciate the new, we need to look back and appreciate the past and the old. A perfect building that represents that is Rumah Penghulu Abu Seman. It's an unassuming traditional Malay house located at No. 2 Jalan Stoner. But that's not its original location though. It was initially owned many years ago by a village chief called Abu Seman all the way from Kedah. Along the way, the house was then left abandoned and slowly became dilapidated. Upon discovering it, the folks from Badan Warisan Malaysia decided that restoring and relocating it to their place was not so bad an idea after all. Elizabeth Cardosa from Badan Warisan Malaysia joins us again with the story.
I mean, the Rumah Penghulu Abu Seman was moved, relocated, I would say, to Kuala Lumpur in 1996 and established and sort of set its roots, if you want to put it that way, you know, put down its tiang at No. 2 Jalan Stoner in KL as a project that Badan Warisan Malaysia undertook, looking at I wasn't directly involved in the project, and therefore I look at it in a sense, you know, from, I'm not going to say more objective point of view, but I would look at it from my, I think my analysis is not going to be as much emotional, you know, as the people who were directly involved in it. And it was very important for its time. I mean, you know, Malay vernacular architecture, timber buildings are, they're timber structures. We don't really pay that much attention to it. Except this was sort of quite a grand house. You know, it's got carvings. It was large for its type. But it was being eaten up by the jungle. It had been abandoned for many, many years, 20, 30 years before Badan Warisan came across it. And really the only way to save it, in a sense, was to initiate a project, to do a pilot project, which is what Badan Warisan undertook, to relocate it from the land it was on, which, you know, people weren't looking after it. The jungle had kind of eaten into it. It was left abandoned and was very, very dilapidated. And the only way to sort of, you know, do anything with it, because even if you were to repair it and restore it there, nobody was going to live in it. You know, it was just there as a structure. And it didn't have that kind of critical community to keep it and to maintain it. So the decision was made to move it, to purchase it. It was bought through various brokers, yeah, including the people in the district office. They were very, very helpful. The DO's office helped with that, you know, finding the Waris, basically. Yeah, and then it was moved to KL through a process of, because it was timber, you could dismantle it. And then you could move it and then you could reconstruct it. So a bit like Lego, yeah? You know, you dismantle it and you put it back together. In order to do that, you have to have a plan, right? And that plan has to mark, you know, this one has to go here, this one has to go there, you know, A, B, C, D, that kind of thing, 1, 2, 3, 4. So when you dismantle it in sequence, 1, 2, 3, 4, you reinstate it in reverse order. And if you don't have a plan that tells you that, you're probably going to make mistakes along the way, right? So the project was actually to sort of, you know, to try to understand it and to turn it into a project to help us, you know, appreciate and highlight the plight, I think, of Malay vernacular timber architecture. So it was, anyway, the long and the short of it was purchased and it was moved to KL and then reconstructed on this piece of land, which Badan Warisan had a lease on. But, you know, this land, apart from the building, which is timber and therefore temporary and therefore, unlike a brick building can get CF, yeah, timber building can't, huh? There's no such thing. It is considered, it will continue to be considered a temporary structure. And it was reconstructed with the help of lots and lots of people. Lots of people were involved, including institutions like FRIM, initially UTM, UM, you know, so the universities were involved, different individuals in putting it together, plus the contractor, plus specialists, you know, architects, timber specialists, who felt that it was really, really important to highlight this type of structure as part of this story of Malaysia's architectural heritage. And it was placed in a way in KL to bring up, it wasn't an istana. You often see people pay attention to these grand buildings. You don't see people pay attention to the more modest building. So this was an attempt on Badan Warisan's part to say, wait a minute, it's not just the heritage of the royals. It's not just the heritage of the kings. It is the heritage of the rakyat as well. And yeah, this rakyat was a bit like Penghulu, yeah. Nevertheless, it came from a very small kampung in Kedah, you know, just across the border from Sungai Petani. So it was like, you know, Bandar Baru nearby on the other side of the river, so to speak. You know, Perak was more developed, maybe it would be seen. And so this was a bit more ulu, you know. Nevertheless, the type of architecture, the beauty of the building, and the fact that the building wasn't just only a house. It wasn't only a house. It also contained the history of the Penghulu and the administration of the place. So the structure is in three parts. In most houses, you will see the Rumah Ibu, which is the main house, yeah? And then the dapur, sort of the more domestic living quarters, yeah? The dapur and the ruang makan. And there may be a selang that connect the two. Sometimes it's open, sometimes it's closed. And, you know, the dapur may be covered. It may be like just a planta, you know, at the back. And that's what you would typically find in a Malay house. But attached to this Malay house is a balai, what we call a balai, because it was exactly that. It was a hall. You know, I mean, you know, it has a corridor, a veranda, what big veranda, where you had meetings, you could conduct meetings and things like that, and a little office for the Penghulu, who was administrating the place on behalf, you know, and looking after, I suppose, the community around. You know, so he was like the district officer would be, you know, he was the Penghulu of the area and was serving to make sure that the administration of the place, you know, the law of the place, the communities were serviced in all manners. And this balai, you know, you would have meetings, you could have discussions, you could also have somebody, if somebody had done some bad thing like thievery or something, they could be tangkap and then brought to the Penghulu, and there would be, you know, a little jury, you know, I mean, you know, it would serve the community in that sense. And this was attached to the main house. And that really was what Badan Warisan, you know, found really interesting, because you don't find that conjunction of these number of things, because in most administrative places, you would have the administration and then you would have the rumah, right? But here it was joined, it was linked. So that really is what makes this place quite unique. The restoration, I think the moving and the restoration took about 15 to 18 months. We did, you know, quite intensive documentation, video recordings of the process so that it could be used as a teaching tool. We worked with Frim, who are the timber specialists, and they were the contractors as well. So they're carpenters, developed an affinity with the place. And I think they learned quite a lot in the process. And we learned quite a lot in the process. And it has continued its teaching function in that sense, because as a site, it's open to the public. It's also open. We do visit, you know, you can just be a tourist, or you don't have to be a foreign tourism, because we get a lot of Malaysians who come and say, dulu ada rumah macam ni, sekarang tak ada lagi. You know what I mean? Or I remember when I was a child, you know, going, you know, or when I lived in the kampung, or my, you know, datuk nenek, you know, that kind of thing. And now everything is so urbanized and everything is such, you know, like brick and mortar and air conditioning and all of that. So it is, it does have that nostalgic feel about it. But it's also a memory of a time where you look at this building and then you look at the Twin Towers, which we are in the vicinity of, and you realize that in 100 years, this is how the nation has progressed, which is, it's a wonderful sort of, you know, juxtaposition of that, where you've moved from this one Malay Timbahau sitting in the garden with a single-story colonial, with a bungalow, colonial bungalow brick, next door to which are towering, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70-story towers. And that contrast is something that I think, you know, is a good reminder for us as to what our values are. What do we want? Where do we want to place things? And I think that was also part of Banwar San's intention there. You know, not just to save the building, but to be able to continue to use it and to demonstrate that it has as legitimate a role now as it did in the past.
So how was the house actually discovered by Badan Warisan Malaysia?
You know, Badan Warisan, you know, had members who just move around, find out things, people offer us things, you know, and it came to pass that one of our members was told about this building and was told that, okay, it's, you know, you better go and see it before it disappears because it's very beautiful. Not to go and buy it or whatever, but upon discovery of it and then learning that actually it was just, if nobody did anything about it, it would literally, because it's wood, it would just go back to the earth. And I think that Banu Warisan at that time really wanted to do something in KL which was not just urban in terms of setting, because we'd done quite a lot of work at that time in Terengganu, in Johor and in Kelantan that were timber buildings related, and in Perak, Kedah, but not in KL per se, because, you know, KL is so urban. And imagine this in the sort of the late 90s, yeah, you know that this drive to, we're coming to the 21st century, right? You know, what do we want, you know, to remind ourselves of something which is 19th century, never mind, not even 20th century, and we're moving into the 21st century. So the drive is, you know, for tall and steel and glass and concrete. And what does a single, you know, what does a Malay house, which is timber, which belongs to a kampung, and an age which is well past, what does it have to do with our future? And I think that these were sort of parts of the reasons why Banu Warisan decided to get into the project. And then it was offered, you know, through an intermediary for the family. And after some consideration, and we were able to find a sponsor to help with that, we had members who were very interested in looking at this process, not the relocation process, but, you know, understanding more about issues related to heritage and to the protection of vernacular heritage. It just kind of fell together, really. You know, I think at the end of the day, the district office came in, the DO came in, and maybe, I don't know, I can't say, you know, whether that was part of that, you know, this is part of the state administration, this is part of the way in which we administrate ourselves. I don't think that that was a big part of it, though. But the fact of the matter is it was a very beautiful house. There were very beautiful, very fine carvings in it. And it was, apart from the fact that it was dilapidated, it hadn't been changed dramatically. You didn't have parts of the house hacked away and made into concrete block. You know, the dapur was still the dapur, as opposed to the dapur being knocked off and then you have a new structure stuck onto the side of the house, which is made out of concrete, which you find in most places, right? Because it's more convenient. You know, you don't find the toilet, you know, next door. Actually, you kind of still, at that point, had to go to the well, you know, which possibly was one of the reasons why it was abandoned. I don't know, but, you know, but I know, actually, I do know. The reason why it was abandoned was because there was no inheritance, you know, that it stopped at a point when there was nobody to inherit the place anymore. Because Abu Saman built it and then his son inherited it, but then his son didn't have anybody he could pass it on to. And when you don't have a single owner, and you have many owners, it becomes really very difficult as to who really has, you know, ownership, so to speak, of that place. And so it's just left, because it's like, if I have 1/20th share and you have 1/20th share, and there are 20 of us who have to agree, sometimes it gets a bit difficult. And very often we find that when it comes to buildings of that nature, when, you know, when this is a shared inheritance, unless you had a trust, things fall between the gaps. Because if you don't get 100% agreement, then you have problems.
That was Elizabeth Cardosa from Badan Warisan Malaysia telling the history of Rumah Penghulu Abu Saman, a traditional Malay house from Kedah that's now in our city. Coming up, she will share the process that the house went through for the big move to our urban jungle. Stay tuned, I'm Hanif Baharudin and this is I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin. Elizabeth Cardosa from Badan Warisan Malaysia joins me on the show for our monthly special on buildings and places in the Klang Valley. For the month of September, the month of Malaysia Day, we're looking at Rumah Penghulu Abu Saman, a traditional Malay house from Kedah that's now calling Kuala Lumpur its home. We explored the narratives of the house in the first part of the show. Now Elizabeth is going to walk us through the decision behind moving the house here.
I think the decision to move it to KL was because concurrently at that time, Badan Warisan had moved it. It used to be housed in one room at the old PAM build. I mean, at the old building on Jalan Tan Sri, where PAM had the headquarters at that time, and it moved to this bungalow. You know, in the shadow, I would say, of KLCC that was being built at that time, and you know, the area people had vacated it, and this was an old government bungalow. It was old government quarters, and it was enough land to relocate this building onto. So it became sort of almost a natural thing. Why don't we move it and we have a place we can place it? And then it becomes a project where we can learn, Frim can learn, you know, our partners can learn. It can be used as a teaching tool, but it can also be a way to highlight the, you know, the beauty of this kind of architecture, and ultimately not just for students and all of that, but for visitors, you know, for people who don't go outside of KL, let's say. You know, so it's all of those things which made it, I think, combined together, you know. And then we managed to find a sponsor.
That's the most important.
And that was, yeah, because if you didn't have the money, you couldn't do it, you know, that kind of thing. If you didn't have the commitment, you didn't have the belief. So we had to have the belief of the people in Kedah, and we had to have the belief of the mayor in KL that it was a good thing. And really, because of a conjunction of all of these things, and Tun Ahmad Saji, at that time he was Tan Sri Ahmad Saji, who was our president, you know, was able to mobilize and to bring these people together, and that sort of, you know, to catalyze the project as it was. But he managed that part of it, and then the architects ran the rest, because that was their job. You know, the conservators ran the rest, the historians ran the rest, I mean, because that was their job. Mm. And so it was a team effort, I would say, you know. Mm.
Did you receive any opposition from the locals there? I know that the Warriors said yes to it, but did the locals there?
I don't think so. From my reading, what happened many years later, is that we still get people who were from the kampung or nearby who will drop in, by the way, and say, I remember when, you know, this house was there. It's nice to see it. It's nice to, I'm going to take a picture because I'm going to go back and show it to my mother, my grandmother or something like that, because they remember the house when it was in its prime. So people were really happy to be able to see something which is very beautiful, which had deteriorated and had been neglected, come back, be reversed. And I think that has, you know, continued to gain traction in that sense.
So it's a house, it's a Malay vernacular house from Kedah. And if we were to actually study the Malay vernacular architecture, we know that there are a lot of different types depending on the geographical location, right? So maybe you can help describe to our listeners what kind of Malay vernacular house this is.
You can Google it. If you look up Rumah Penghulu Abu Saman, you'll be able to see photos of it. I mean, it's really quite typical in that sense. Sort of because it's Kedah Perak border, you know, there are quite a few sort of reflections of the Perak architecture in the northern part. It's quite tall. It's quite high off the ground. You know, it has the main hall, which was it would have been reached by a set of stairs, you know, going through a doorway into the main hall. And it has windows all around, which are jalousie windows, what we call jalousie windows. They're louvered windows, but timber shutters with louvers. But the louvers can move up and down. Like you have, you know, not, you know, like glass louvers and all that, you can move up and down. This is timber. It's all created in timber. It's all built and constructed in timber. And so it lets in light, it lets in air, but it can also close it off. So it depends on the rain, depends on that. And that's the main house. Toward the back, which is, again, quite typical, you go down a couple of steps, and this actually reflects kind of a hierarchy as well, right? The main house is for the showpiece, you know, for your guests, where you have events and activities there that you want to show, not show off, but you want to show respect to your guests, so you show them the best thing. Within this main house, before I go into the secondary part of the building, there are two bedrooms off to the sides, and they don't have doors because, you know, typically they wouldn't have had doors, right? You know, this idea of what we consider privacy in our modern world, it's a completely different sense of privacy. It was curtains, it had curtains. You behave differently, you know, when you're private, you tutup your door, you can blast your music, you know, I mean, you soundproof your room, nobody gets disturbed. Here, you can't do that. Absolutely, you can't do that. I mean, the floors are timber, so you walk, somebody's going to hear you. You know, you got no door, so you say something, everybody can hear you, you know, so you learn to speak in a more modest fashion, you learn to speak in a controlled fashion, and that is really a reflection of the kind of cultural setting as well. But okay, so you have these two rooms, which would have been used by the sort of like the senior adults, yeah? And if anybody has ever sort of come from a more traditional environment, and if you have like, let's say, quite a large family living there, you know, many kids and different, I mean, you take out your bedroll and you take out your tika and you tidur lah, right? Mm. But anyway, so that's the main house. And you go down a couple of steps and that leads you to a selang, which in this case is a covered selang. And off the selang, there are also another set of steps coming from the ground up. And that set of steps would have been traditionally the domain of the women guests, because the male guests would be the ones who would enter from the front, and the women guests, female guests, would be the ones who enter from the side and the back, toward the back, which is the domain of the female domain, and children. And the selang is then a corridor. And then you come to the ruang makan, okay, which is your dining area, which is really your family area. So that whole section is family. I mean, of course, men go there and women go. But guests who are not members of the family don't go there. They will remain in a more formal area. This is really for family. And it's quite traditional. It's quite traditional. And most people don't go and say, come into my kitchen or my backyard, right? You know, when your guests come, you know, they stay in the living room, you know? So it's the same thing. It's just that's the way it translates. And then you go down a couple more steps to one side, and that's the dapur, the rumah dapur. Now, the rumah dapur was built at a different time and was bought, and moved or bought or whatever it was. It was transported there. Is it, again, a more basic building? I mean, a part of the build structure, lower. And then you have some steps leading out again, which are very, again, that would be the lowest part of the house, of the main house, because you would have had to bring water, you'd have to bring things in from the well, from the garden, from the outside. And you don't want to be climbing many, many, many stairs, right? So that was just so, that was a very practical reason, you know, for that. And the steps there are very modest. They are not fancy or carved. And you see the hierarchy. You see, you know, you understand the hierarchy of structures. You have the formality of the rumah ibu. You have the family nature of the selang with the makan, the dining area. The children would play there, etc., etc. And then you would have the dapur, which would be, again, this place where you cooked and you interacted with your neighbours, if you were, but female neighbours, yeah? But you would also, and it was more modest and it was more familiar in that sense. But attached to it, like I say, before you enter the main house now, you know, they added this balai, which was added in the 1930s. So a completely different structure put up there and having a different purpose. So from an architectural point of view, you know, it was built, you know, in the main Malay house, you will have tiang. You will see the tiang in the rumah ibu. But in this place, it was just built on footings. So it's much lower and it's built on footings. And then it was just that one room that served as his office, but it was also purported to have served as a lockup, because if ada orang jahat, then you need to put him away or lock him or her up before, you know, the police come or, you know, the authorities come and deal with it. That was, so there are bars on the windows, for example, you know. But we have set the whole house, dressed it, so to speak, in a 1950s and 1960s style, in terms of artifacts, in terms of the exhibition that we put in there, which was, as I said, when the house was in its prime. And to reflect that transition, you know, between sort of a more rural Malay. And remember, we're looking at a position, actually at a point in the mid-50s when we're looking at this transition between a colonial government and a Malayan government, you know. And so we reflect that period in terms of the modesty, in terms of the lifestyle. And we look at the architecture as reflecting that as well. Modest family, having certain values and creating a sense of that period.
Mm. What was the process of relocating the house like? Because you have to, of course, disassemble the house. Was it a total disassembly? Or was it a partial disassembly? And how did you actually transport the house?
Everything was marked in the dismantling. So if you have, let's say, a timber wall, yeah, and or timber panels or louvers, and you know, you it's marked on plan, and then it's marked, the same number is marked, so you know where it goes. You can do that relationship, right? And it's marked in chalk. So can you imagine somebody coming along or putting it under the rain, and the rain comes down? And so, you know, you had to, as it was, first everything was marked so that the plan and the record and the structure was the same. And then you dismantled it from top to bottom. You build from bottom to top. You restore from top to bottom, but you dismantle also from top to bottom, because you can't remove the legs if you don't remove the head, so to speak, right? So everything was dismantled, packed away, marked according to that numbered. So if you knew you had X number of crates, X, you know, Y number of pieces of wood, that kind of thing, you would know where to put it back once you get it back. And then it was, but before it was dismantled, there was a ceremony. I mean, there was a kunduri, you know, to mark that we're going to do this. Everybody came, the people in Kampung came, the family came, the DO came, you know, Badang Warisan was there. And it was a celebration that this house was going to have a new lease of life. It wasn't, why are you stealing our things or whatever? You know, it was a celebration. You know, it was an acknowledgement that, you know, this house meant something, which also I think for the community would mean that the community means something, because, you know, there is a continuity on their story. It may be relocated somewhere else, but it is part of their story, and they are part of its story in its new place. So it was dismantled, packed, then put on flatbed, you know, lorry. Some of the panel walls were taken down whole, and these were because they could be secured and taken down whole. The things that were really quite rotten, you know, were treated and then packed and then brought over. And then once it was brought to the new site had to be prepared to receive, so to speak, the new house being relocated there. So the land had to be prepared and all sorts of, you know, technical things had to happen. And of course, we had to look at the orientation of the house because, you know, in terms of Malay house, we had to look at where Qiblat was. We had to look at, you know, how you position it so that it would be traditionally as well as from a culturally, you know, sensitive, yeah, and where it's placed. So anyway, all of that happened. And then you then take out your plans and then you begin to reassemble. So the reassembly took, like I said, about 15 months. And the Frim carpenters would come and they would work under a big tent and they would, you know, the things that were not good and had been eaten by termite were, you know, disposed of and new things were put in where there was chungal, hardwood, where we needed hardwood, we used it, and the original was chungal, we used chungal. And where if we couldn't get chungal, we used balau, which is another hardwood. Where again, you know, with the softer woods, like the things like walls and things like that, we used meranti. And once that was completed, the house was oiled. And then there was another ceremony. Oh, sorry, actually in between, before we started the project, when we were raising the Tiang Seri, there was a ceremony to celebrate that. And then at the end, there was a ceremony to open the house. So the house has had many ceremonies, you know, in honor of and in respect of it. Like you have, you know, you launch a building, you have an open house, you have same thing. And I think that that's also part of the story of the place. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Okay. So as a conclusion, Rumah Penghulu Abu Saman is now based in KL. And like you mentioned earlier, you sort of like want to juxtapose the old and the new in Malaysia, right? Why do you think it's crucial for us to always build some kind of bridge between the old and the new?
I think you never understand new if you don't know what was old. I mean, you don't, not just you don't understand it, but you just don't appreciate it. You know, if you don't know where you came from, how do you know not just where you're going to, but what has happened along the way to get you to where you're going to? And I think that that to me is crucial. Badan Warisan's work in protecting and promoting Malaysia's built heritage and cultural heritage is not about keeping things in the past. You know, saying, this is important, let's put it under a piece of glass and say, keep it that way. No. It is about looking at what the values are that it conveys, in the case of this Malay house, what it gives you an understanding of a cultural setting, a group of traditions, a group, a skill set architect, you know, from a building point of view, yeah? And then seeing how that applies and translates in terms of understanding why buildings in this country, because we are tropical, you know, were tropicalized so that it could, how do you protect yourself against rain? How do you ventilate the place rather than live in something which can be anywhere in the world? And that is what is important about when you look at that, you know, oh, I kind of know where I am. Whereas if you only look at sort of a series of tall buildings, you may not know where in the world you are. If your windows are up and you're in a car and you're on a highway and you're passing them and somebody moved you when you were fast asleep from one country to another, you may not know unless you see the signage and you see different writing, you know, a different font, let's say, or a different calligraphy. You know, I mean, apart from, if you didn't see any of that, you wouldn't know. And so this gives you, this grounds you. This gives you a context within which to make assessments. What do you want for the future? And it doesn't mean that you, no development, cannot. No, it isn't that. Development is about change, but it is about how you manage that change. And if you don't appreciate, you know, this quality of skill, carpentry that went into this, the quality of the lifestyle that people had, it's very hard to appreciate what you have.
We've spent the majority of time on the show talking about traditional timber house that is now located in between concrete and steel buildings. And while that sounds like we're harping on nostalgia, Elizabeth believes that that's not really the case.
And it isn't about nostalgia. It really is about understanding culture. You know, understanding its place, understanding history, knowing that we went from here, you know, 100 years ago to there, you know, 100 years later. You know, where are we? You know, what technology has come along? What have we gained? And what have we lost in the meantime? And I think it is that education, that understanding, you know, that comes along with it. People don't have to, you know, go and say, oh, you know, we should go back to that. Because actually, you know, we run programs for kids and they will go like, you mean I don't have my own door and my own bedroom and I have to share with like, you know, 15 others, like since when? And I, you know, can't sit in front of my TV and I can't play with my whatever, you know, because I can't be noisy. I, you know, when you sit and you have, you makan, you know, in let's say, you know, how do you sit? If you sit on a mat, you know, how do you, you know, you're not sitting on the hoof, you know, you're not having a TV dinner, shall we say, okay? You know, it gives you a moment to pause and to assess. But it doesn't mean that, you know, we want to say, hey, you cannot do what you're doing now. That's absurd. That's not it. But to say, right, this is what you're doing now. Great. This is what people did in the past. A, appreciate where you are now. Don't diss that. But also know that you can only be where you are because of that. And I think it is really trying to understand that balance, that we then appreciate, you know, the past. Because in giving the Rumah Penghulu a new lease of life, which we did by moving it, we also gave its traditions, its stories, but we have built on it in the last 20 years because it was reopened. It was opened. This project was opened in November 1997, which means, you know, that was what, you know, 20 years ago? Yeah. And so we've had new stories to add, you know, for 20 years. 20 years of people having different experiences of it. And that actually makes it just that much more rich, I think. You know, and tradition and culture is about the amount of richness you can bring to your life.
You've been listening to I Love KL, and this week we paid a visit to Rumah Penghulu Abu Saman as a part of our monthly series on historical places and buildings in KL. Elizabeth Cardosa from Badan Warisan Malaysia narrated the history of the house and chronicled the journey of the house from Kedah to Kuala Lumpur. And that marks the end of this week's episode of I Love KL. If you missed any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl or download our latest app via Google Play or the App Store. Also, follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week on BFM 89.9, the business station. Happy Malaysia Day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.